Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 70.
So the story kicks off in the Zuzi Kingdom, and you can tell right away things are off, can't you? There's this heavy feeling, like real fear and distress hanging over the place.
Absolutely. The text sets that up immediately, and the cause.
Mm-hmm.
A demon vanguard. He's from Xenia Caitlin Mountain, Shiichi Cave, serving this really powerful master, King Saitaisui. Even the name suggests serious authority. And his job, well, it's pretty grim. Grab two palace women to serve the Golden Saint Lady.
Hmm.
So the stakes are high from the get-go. You feel the danger.
Right. And just as things look really bad, boom, enter the hero, Sun Wukong himself. He just bursts onto the scene, all power and fury, challenging the demon, you know, holding his famous R, his iron rod. What's that entrance like in the moment?
Oh, it's a game changer. And what's really interesting is the immediate clash of their weapons. It tells you so much. Wukong's rod is called a Ursine, a treasure from the Dragon King's palace, something that, you know, stabilizes the seas. Divine stuff, the demon spear, just, ooh, human world, refined iron, basically just metal. So it's not just a fight. It's symbolic, divine power versus, well, just earthly nastiness. The text itself basically asks, how can mortal metal even touch something divine without just, poof, dissolving?
And it doesn't stand a chance, does it? Wukong just takes one swing and bang, shatters the spear, breaks it clean in two, divine power wins, no contest.
Exactly. An immediate decisive win for Wukong. The demon is terrified, naturally, and just bolts, runs off towards the west. Wukong doesn't chase him right then, but, you know, this isn't over. Defeating the vanguard just means the big boss is still out there. It hints at more trouble to come.
Okay, so the immediate threat, the vanguard, is gone. Crisis averted. For now. What happens next is often just as interesting, right? The aftermath. Wukong gets like Tang Seng and the king out of hiding. They were down in the Wiria, this demon-proof cellar. The king is obviously thrilled, offers Wukong wine to say thanks, but then suddenly there's chaos again, a report comes in fire at the West Gate, and Wukong's reaction, it's very Wukong. He just takes the golden cup of wine and chucks it into the air. Clang. I mean, imagine the king's face. What was that?
Right. Classic Wukong. It looks so disrespectful at first, and the king totally misunderstands. He starts bowing, apologizing, thinking Wukong's insulted by the cheap wine or something, but Wukong just laughs it off. And here's the brilliant part, the aha moment. That throw wasn't an insult. It was magic. The fleeing demon has started that fire. Wukong's thrown wine cup magically becomes this downpour, a wine rain that puts out the fire instantly, leaves the street smelling like wine. It just shows his incredible wit, you know? He's not just about hitting things. He's clever, uses magic in these amazing, unexpected ways. Problem solved, almost casually.
Wow. Okay, so the king must be completely floored now. Gratitude overload. He even offers to give Wukong the throne. Can you believe it? But Wukong's like, nah, thanks. He's very practical. And his focus shifts immediately, doesn't it? Right back to the main threat, King Saitaisui. Why is he so fixated on this main demon king?
Well, it shows his strategic mind and also his sense of responsibility. He knows taking out the vanguard didn't solve the real problem. King Saitaisui is the source of the kingdom's fear. If he doesn't deal with the leader, Saitaisui will just send more demons, maybe worse ones. He's thinking bigger picture. Protect everyone by going straight to the source.
Makes sense. So he asks the king, where is this guy? And the king says, Saitaisui's lair is about roughly 3,000 liro to the south. He mentions it would take normal soldiers like 50 plus days to march there. That's a serious distance.
Oh, it's huge, a massive journey. And the king offers help, you know, supplies, a fast horse. But Wukong, he's not having it. He tells Yinri, Zhu Baji, and Kurei Xiao Wujing, basically, you guys stay here, protect the master. He's ready to go right now. No prep, no waiting. What? Shows his confidence, his unique capabilities.
And this leads to maybe my favorite part. The king looks at Wukong, who, let's be honest, looks like a monkey. And he kind of asks respectfully, you know, how can you possibly travel 3,000 lights so fast? He's basically saying, I saw you fight, but that fast.
Ooh, yeah.
Perfect moment for Wukong to explain himself, isn't it?
It really is. And he doesn't just say, I'm fast. He gives this incredible explanation. It's the real deep dive moment into what makes Wukong, Wukong. It's not just magic powers handed to him. It's profound, rooted in Taoist alchemy and deep spiritual practice. He explains that his abilities come from intense self-cultivation, harmonizing himself with the cosmos, basically. His strength, his speed, they're outward signs of incredible inner mastery. He uses this beautiful poetic language, tells the king, Since he was young, he sought to understand life and death. He searched for enlightened teachers. He practiced constantly. He talks about using heaven as his roof, earth as his furnace, like his whole being was part of this cosmic refinement process and mastering core principles. Two medicines, black and white, is generally understood as yin and yang, or maybe sun and moon, balancing cosmic opposites. He goes on, harnessing yin and yang, water and fire, gathering the five elements, you know, wood, fire, earth, metal, water, the building blocks of everything to cultivate life force. He's mastered reality itself in a way.
Whoa. So all that stuff he mentioned earlier about going 3,000 layers and back before the wine gets cold, he actually meant it. It wasn't just bragging. This inner work, this cultivation, is what allows his famous speed.
Exactly. That cultivation is the source of his success, the cloud somersault, powered by divine aid, as he puts it. It's not a gimmick. It's a result of this deep internal work. It lets him cross huge mountains or legendary crossings in just one leap. That famous 108,000 layer in a single somersault. It comes from this profound mastery he's just described. It's about understanding and manipulating the fundamental forces through discipline.
Okay, the king must be absolutely stunned after hearing all that. Mm. From skepticism to just awe.
Completely. Total respect. Any doubt is gone.
And Wukong, being Wukong, doesn't hang around. He proves his point instantly. The text says, Mocha whoosh, gone, vanished without a trace.
Leaves the king speechless. Wukong leaves the Zuzi kingdom. Mm-hmm. And bam, he hits this massive mountain.
Yeah.
The description is pretty intense. Towering to the sky, occupying the earth, obscuring the sun, generating clouds. It sounds wild, beautiful even, with sharp peaks, distant ranges, pine forests.
Sparkling rocks.
Yeah, sparkling rocks. And it clearly says it's a place where, like, immortals and demons hang out.
And that's important, right? The mountain itself feels like a character, almost warning you. But it's not the mountain that attacks first, is it?
No, that's when the real trouble starts. These elemental attacks just appear. First fire. Mm-hmm. Then smoke.
And then sand.
So let's break down that first wave. The fire sounds almost pretty. 10,000 golden lamps, 1,000 red rainbows.
It does, deceptively so.
But then the smoke. The text says it's more poisonous than fire.
Way more poisonous.
And it's not just gray smoke. It's got five colors. Blue, red, white, black, yellow. Why five?
That's the question, isn't it? That level of detail, the five colors, it screams specialized magic. Really potent stuff. It's not just campfire smoke.
And the effects. Mm. Scorching heaven's pillars, burning palace beams, even creatures caught in it, animals burned to a crisp, birds featherless. Just devastating.
It really sets the bar high for whoever or whatever is behind this. This isn't your average demon.
Definitely not. And then comes the sand.
Ugh, the sand.
It says it covers everything. Covering the sky and blocking the sun, scattering everywhere, obscuring the entire earth.
Total whiteout, basically. Or sand out.
Yeah. And people get lost. Herb gatherers, woodcutters. Even if you had bright pearls, it says it wouldn't help because the sand just made their eyes water. Like stinging your eyes.
So it's this combination, right? Fire to burn, smoke to poison, sand to blind and disorient. It's a complete assault.
On every level.
Exactly. And it forces Wukong, even with all his power, he has to react fast. He can't just, you know, muscle through it the usual way.
So what does he do? He's sneezing because sand's up his nose.
Which is such a relatable detail.
It is. And his solution is so practical. He just finds two pebbles and plugs his nose.
Hmm. Simple but effective.
And then he transforms, his first one in this chapter, right, into a fire-gathering hawk just to fly through the chaos.
And notice, once he flies through, the text says the smoke and fire just dissipate.
Yeah. So why a hawk? Why not just, you know, blast it away? Seems like a subtle move for Wukong.
I think it shows his cleverness, his resourcefulness, maybe conserving energy. He doesn't know the full extent of the threat yet. It's tactical.
Okay, so he gets through the elemental attacks. He must be thinking, okay, path cleared.
You'd think so.
But then he hears the sound, a ding-dong, copper gong.
Ah, the gong.
And he misreads it completely at first, thinks it's just some official courier on a main road.
That moment of misdirection, it's classic. It lowers his guard, maybe, sets up the next reveal.
Which is?
The source of the gong. Not a courier, but a minor demon.
Right, this little demon carrying a yellow flag, documents, beating the gong, looking really rushed.
And Wukong, instead of just confronting him, what does he do?
He gets sneaky, transforms into a fierce insect to eavesdrop.
And this is where we get that amazing soliloquy, the demons just talking to himself.
Muttering away.
Yeah.
Which makes it feel so authentic, right? Like you're really hearing his inner thoughts.
Exactly. You're getting the raw intel.
And what intel? The demon says his king is too cruel.
Really emphasizes the cruelty.
And reveals the big secret. 3 years ago, this king kidnapped the Golden Saint Empress from the Zuzi Kingdom.
But here's the twist.
Yeah, get this. The demon says the king has had no fate or connection and hasn't been able to touch her for 3 whole years.
Incredible, isn't it? He has her captive, but can't, well, consummate the crime.
Instead, he's been taking it out on palace maids, using them as substitutes, the demon says, and killing them. 2, then 4. Just awful.
It immediately changes things. It's not just about power. There's some kind of barrier, something stopping the king. It adds this huge layer of mystery.
And the demon explains why he's running around with this gong now.
Right. The king's vanguard, his leader, got beaten by some Sun Wukong. That's us.
Huh. Yeah. When they tried to demand more maids from the Zuzi King.
So the king's furious.
Totally. And this little demon is delivering a challenge letter to the Zuzi King, basically saying, fight me and you'll lose. And I'll unleash that smoke, fire, and sand on your whole kingdom.
The same stuff Wukong just faced. It connects everything.
But what really gets me is the demon's final comment. After spilling all this, he mutters,
Heaven's principles cannot tolerate this.
From a minor demon, a foot soldier in this evil army, it's a profound moment of moral clarity from the most unexpected place. It shows even evil isn't monolithic.
Absolutely. So Wukong's heard all this. And that detail about the king not being able to touch the empress obviously sticks with him.
He needs to know why.
So transformation number 2, this time into a little Taoist boy.
Complete with the double top knot, patched robe, fish drum, the whole look.
Singing Taoist songs, looking harmless. He just walks up to the demon.
It's pure intel gathering now. Social engineering almost.
The demon totally falls for it. Thinks he's just some kid wandering by.
Yeah, lets his guard down.
And spills the final secret. When the Empress was taken, some immortal gave her a parting gift for her trousseau.
A gift that turned out to be a lifesaver.
A 5-colored immortal robe, and when she puts it on...
Get this. Her whole body grows thorns or needles.
Like a porcupine. Exactly. So the Demon King literally can't touch her. Even a light touch, the demon says, makes his palm hurt.
That's why she's been safe. Physically, at least. For 3 years. Amazing.
It's the aha moment, isn't it? Not magic resistance in general, but this specific divine intervention tied to her clothing.
Yeah.
A subtle form of power.
So Wukong's got the whole picture now. The cruelty, the reason for it, the Empress's defense.
He knows the score.
So he pretends to say goodbye to the demon, walks away a few steps,
and
whips out the old reed, jingabang the staff, and whack, kills the demon instantly.
Swift. Decisive.
He does feel a tiny bit bad he didn't ask the demon's name first.
But then he finds something.
Yeah, on the demon's waist. A gold inlaid identity plaque.
And the details on it are so specific. A trusted minor officer named Yulai Yuko.
Which means has come, has gone.
Perfect name for a courier, I guess. And it even gives his description. Short stature, flat face, no beard. Plus instructions. Always wear it. No plaque means you're a fake.
It adds such realism, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even for this minor character.
It really does.
And Wukong, of course, can't resist a pun.
Oh, no.
He says, this guy's name is has come, has gone, but this staff strike made him has gone and not come back.
Okay, that's pretty good for Wukong.
So he takes the plaque, grabs the challenge letter the demon was carrying, hides the flag and gong.
And interestingly, he decides to carry the demon's body back, not just report in.
Why do that?
Well, the text implies he's still wary. He remembers the poison of the smoke and fire. He's being cautious. Maybe he wants proof. He calls the body his first merit, his trophy. So Baji sees Wukong return, and Wukong's carrying this demon's corpse. And Baji immediately jumps in, complaining, you know, if he'd known, he would have done it himself to get the credit. Then he actually starts, like, hitting the already dead demon right there at the palace steps, shouting, this is my credit!
Classic Baji. And his proof, he says, don't deny me, I have proof. Haven't you seen one rake hit 9 holes?
No.
Which is, you know, his signature move with his weapon. Yeah. It's just pure Baji, isn't it? All ego, bit of laziness, maybe?
Totally. And Wukong, who's always the practical one, right?
Yeah.
He just tells him, okay, check if the demon has a head.
Yeah.
And Baji's realization, oh, It's headless. That's why it didn't move. It just adds this this layer of comedy.
Yeah, it definitely breaks the tension for a second. But then the scene shifts because the king of Zuzi Kingdom himself comes out. He's clearly anxious. He's expecting news about the big bad Sai Taisui.
Mm-hmm.
But Wukong just presents this, well, this minor demon he already killed.
And that's interesting because the king knows immediately this isn't the main guy.
Right. Why is that? How does he know?
Well, the king gives this really vivid description of Sai Taisui. He says he's 18 feet tall, 5 spans broad, face like golden light, voice like thunder. Just massive, terrifying. And he points at the corpse Wukong brought and says, basically, this thing is short and lowly compared to the real deal.
Okay, so it's not even close.
Not at all. And Wukong quickly clarifies, oh no, this was just a minor demon I ran into and took care of on my way here.
And the king is actually delighted, even by this small win.
Yeah, he is. Which maybe shows just how desperate he is, like you were hinting. He gives Wukong first merit right away and even offers celebratory wine.
Okay, but here's where things take a real turn, don't they? Emotional, heart-wrenching, really.
Mm.
Wukong pivots. He's always focused on the mission, right? And he asks the king about the abducted queen, Queen Jinshengong. Specifically, did she leave behind any keepsake?
And that word keepsake, it just hits the king incredibly hard. The text says he bursts into tears. Yeah. He recounts the whole tragedy. It happened during the Jimming Festival, this big annual event when the fierce demon Taisui just grabbed her, snatched the imperial wife, and he emphasizes, you know, there were no farewell words, no proper goodbyes, no sign or fragrant pouch left behind, nothing. He's just been left completely bitter and solitary.
You can really feel that pain. It's such a stark contrast to Baji just moments before.
It really is. It grounds the story in that raw human emotion, even amidst all the fantasy.
So let's talk strategy. Why is this keepsake so important for Wukong? He's the Monkey King, known for his power. Why focus on an object instead of just, you know, planning an attack?
That's a great question. Wukong explains his thinking. He knows the Demon King is, like, immensely powerful. He can unleash smoke, fire, and sand. Super hard to beat in a straight fight. But maybe even more important than that, he's worried about the queen herself. Even if he manages to rescue her, why should she trust him? This strange monkey creature showing up.
Oh, right. She wouldn't know who he is.
Exactly. He needs proof. He says he needs one of her beloved items, something from her daily life, to basically act as credentials, to make her believe he's genuinely there on the king's behalf.
That's actually really smart. It shows he's thinking beyond just fighting. It's about the psychological aspect, the trust.
Precisely. It's about foresight, not just brute force.
So does the king have something? What item does he eventually offer?
He does. After composing himself a bit, the king remembers a pair of golden treasure bracelets. They were in the queen's dressing cabinet in Xiang Palace. He explains she wore them all the time, but she took them off during the Duanmu Festival, that's the Dragon Boat Festival, to tie on those traditional five-color threads. And tragically, she was abducted before she ever put them back on.
Oh, man. So they were just left behind. And the king, he can barely look at them, right?
It's incredibly painful for him. He says seeing the bracelets is like seeing her face, her jade face, and it just makes his own illness worse. He's clearly heartsick.
Understandable. But Wukong insists.
He does, gently but firmly. He understands the pain, but he stresses how crucial they are for the plan. He even says, look, if giving up both is too much, just give me one.
Wow.
Yeah. So the king finally agrees. He tells someone, Jade St. Palace, to go get them. And as he hands them over to Wukong, he actually cries out to his dear empress. It's a really moving moment.
And Wukong, what's his reaction?
He takes them immediately. Puts them right on his arm. And get this, he doesn't even wait for that celebratory wine the king offered earlier.
Really? Just bolts.
Straight away. Hops on his somersault cloud and heads directly for Karen Mountain. That tells you everything about the urgency, you know.
No.
Mission first.
Absolutely. Okay, so he's approaching the demon's lair, Karen Mountain. Does he just charge in now that he has the bracelets?
No, not Wukong. He's too clever for that. He gets near the entrance, this place called Jazy Cave, which is the demon's main stronghold, and he stops to observe. He takes stock.
And what does he see? What kind of defenses are we talking about here?
It's quite the setup. The text says there are about 500 demons guarding the gate. Leaders, soldiers, the whole lot.
500?
Yeah, and they're not just standing around. They're densely arrayed, organized, holding all sorts of weapons, banners fluttering. It sounds like a proper army.
What kinds of demons are mentioned?
It's a real mix. You've got tiger generals, bear masters, leopard-headed ones, civet cat marshals. Then there are fierce gray wolves, valiant otters and elephants, even cunning rabbits and deer, long snakes and pythons with swords and bows, and probably most surprising orangutans who can actually understand human speech and know about battle formations and even, like, the weather.
Orangutans who know strategy. That's unexpected.
It really paints a picture, doesn't it? This isn't some random rabble. It's a well-equipped, diverse, and somewhat sophisticated demonic force.
Okay, so Wukong sees all this. And despite his own incredible power, he doesn't just wade in. The text says he dared not advance, but then clarifies, it was not out of fear. So, if not fear, what stops him? And what's his plan?
Right. It's strategy again. He realizes a frontal assault against that many organized demons would be, well, messy. Probably alert the big boss too quickly. He needs a smarter way in.
So what does the master strategist cook up this time?
He actually retreats for a moment, goes back to the spot where he killed that first minor demon earlier.
Okay, why?
He finds the stuff that demon dropped its yellow flag and its copper gong. Then, using his transformation magic, he changes himself.
Into what?
Into the exact appearance of the one who came and went. Basically, he disguises himself perfectly as that minor demon he just killed.
Ah, brilliant.
Isn't it? Then he picks up the gong, starts beating it just like the demon probably would, and confidently just strolls right towards the heavily guarded entrance of Sizzy Cave, which is, well, it's a demon stronghold.
Not somewhere you'd usually volunteer to visit.
Definitely not. And what's immediately striking is Wukong's strategy. It's audacious. He's transformed himself into Yulai Yukwa.
Which means, what you come, you go. Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. A fitting name for a really low-level, kind of come-and-go subordinate of the Demon King.
And that name itself tells you something, doesn't it? About his status. He's easily dismissed, easily overlooked.
The perfect cover?
Makes him the perfect vessel for Wukong's plan. The source even mentions the demon stronghold having precious flowers and jade grasses.
Interesting detail.
Yeah, subtly beautiful, almost ironic, for a den of monsters.
Yeah.
It kind of highlights the deceptive nature of the place, you know. Dangerous, but cloaked in this unexpected grandeur.
Right.
And Wukong doesn't hesitate. He fully commits to this persona, even down to beating a gong as he walks deeper into the lair.
Which leads him right into a confrontation with the big boss, the Demon King himself.
Mm-hmm.
As Wukong enters, he sees this magnificent but terrifying eight-window pavilion, and there's the Demon King enthroned.
And the description is something else.
It really is. Absolutely chilling. It talks about shimmering rosy light on his head, a fierce, murderous aura from his chest.
Wow.
Fangs like sharp blades, eyes like brass bells. He's holding this massive iron staff, like a sky-supporting pillar.
So not just a monster, but like a force of nature.
Yeah.
Really imposing.
Totally. But Wukong's reaction to this, while this overwhelming presence, that's where the tactical genius really kicks in.
It truly is. Wow. Wukong's audacity here is just, well, it's legendary.
Uh-huh.
Despite this terrifying figure, the text says he publicly ignored the Demon King.
Ignores him.
Yeah. Didn't follow any etiquette, actually turned his face away and just kept beating his gong.
Okay, that seems incredibly reckless. He's in disguise, trying to gain trust, but he provokes the very being he's trying to fool. What's the thinking there?
It almost feels like a challenge, right? Like, maybe it's just Wukong being Wukong, that rebellious streak coming out.
Could be.
But I think it's also a calculated gamble. He forces the Demon King to engage with him directly. It's almost like psychological judo.
Using the demon's own expectations against him to make the beaten subordinate act more believable.
That's exactly it. By acting out, he guarantees the Demon King's attention. It gives him the perfect stage for his big performance, his totally made-up tale of woe.
Right.
So Wukong drops his gong and launches into this dramatic act, pretending to be incredibly distressed.
Okay, so what's the story he tells?
He claims he was captured by this huge army from the Zuzin Kingdom, dragged into the city, brought before their king,
that
was nearly executed. He throws in lines like, I was scared silly, and says he was beaten so badly, 30 lashes apparently, before they finally let him go.
And he really sells it. I remember the description of the enemy forces he supposedly faced. It's overwhelming.
Oh, completely. He exaggerates the enemy's arsenal, listing every weapon you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Bows, arrows, knives, spears, then large axes, round shields, caltrops. It just goes on and on.
It's almost comical, the sheer volume of it.
It is, but it's designed that way.
Yeah.
It's not just describing a battle. It's meant to make the Demon King believe in this massive, overwhelming force that supposedly beat him.
To make his defeat plausible.
Exactly. That detailed, almost suffocating list validates the Demon King's own pride. Wukong gets that the demon wants to believe he's invincible.
Right.
So he presents this external threat that's so immense that even he, Wukong as Yulai Yukua, was overwhelmed. It plays right into the Demon King's ego, makes the lie easier to swallow.
So how does the Demon King react to this terrifying tale of defeat?
He just laughs. Laughs it off completely.
Really? After that whole performance?
Yep. He says, it's nothing, nothing. Such weapons will all be nullified by one fire.
Oh, okay. And that's a huge clue for us, isn't it? A bit of dramatic irony.
Absolutely huge. It's a clear hint about his real power, that infamous purple gold red gourd.
The one that unleashes fire, smoke, and sand.
That's the one. The Demon King is so supremely confident in his magic artifact that he just dismisses any conventional army, no matter how big Wukong makes it sound.
So his arrogance kind of plays right into Wukong's hands.
That's perfectly. And in his arrogance, the Demon King inadvertently gives Wukong exactly what he needed next. He tells Wukong to go inform the Golden Saintess about this supposed defeat.
To ease her worries, apparently.
Right. And the text even includes Wukong's internal thought, just what this old son wanted, that little nickname, Old Son. It's classic Wukong.
A bit cheeky, but shows his confidence.
Totally. He's absolutely delighted because this gives him direct access to the Saintess, which was the goal all along.
Okay, so Wukong, still disguised as Yulai Yukua, heads off to the Saintess' quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And the description shifts here, doesn't it? It's a real contrast to the rougher demon cave outside.
Big contrast. It's described as high halls and grand buildings.
Yeah.
Much more beautiful and stately.
And inside.
Inside, there are attendants described as fox and deer demons who are disguised as beautiful women.
Okay.
But the real focus, obviously, is on the Golden Saintess herself, Queen Jinshingong.
And she's not exactly happy, is she?
Far from it. What really stands out is this image of her beauty, completely tangled up with deep sorrow.
Yeah.
She has a delicate jade face, enchanting beauty, but the details tell a story. Too lazy to comb her hair, no hairpins or jewelry, no powder, faded rouge.
It paints such a picture of despair.
It really does. Pursed cherry lips, biting silver teeth, furrowed brows, tear-filled starry eyes. You get this vivid sense of her emotional state. She's just longing for the King of Zuzi, feeling trapped in this heaven's net and earth's snare.
And there's that classic line.
Right. Since ancient times, beautiful women have had unfortunate fates, weary and silent facing the east wind. It really hits home, captures her despair perfectly. It feels like this universal truth seen through her specific suffering. It really does. A soul just worn down, which makes Wukong's next move almost.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable.
How so?
Given her noble background, her obvious sadness, his greeting is just terrible.
Ah, right. The Jinuo.
Yeah. This crude military-style salute, it deeply offends her. She's used to, you know, prime ministers bowing to her.
And she calls him out on it. Calls him an uncouth monster.
She does. Wonders where he picked up such awful manners. Why do that? Why be so rude right then?
That's a great question. It could be a couple of things, I think. On one hand, as Yulai Yukua, this low-level grunt, maybe that kind of uncouthness adds to the disguise, makes it seem more authentic.
Okay, maybe. Plausible.
On the other hand, it could also be a deliberate provocation. A way to test her, maybe? Or just to quickly break through the formality, distinguish himself from her usual attendants, and force a unique interaction.
Get her attention, basically.
Exactly. And rudeness certainly does that.
He recovers quickly, though. He hints he has a heart-to-heart message from the king, something that can't be shared with the attendants there.
Clever move. And she, driven by that deep longing for the king, immediately dismisses the fox and deer demons.
Which sets the stage perfectly.
So it's a big reveal.
The stage is absolutely set. Wukong closes the palace door. And then in this really pivotal moment, the text says he wipes his face and just reverts to his true form.
Mm.
Monkey King, standing right there.
Wow. Imagine her shock, fear probably, then maybe hope.
A total whirlwind of emotions, you'd think. It's designed for maximum impact, isn't it? To shatter her isolation instantly.
And he immediately tells her not to be afraid.
Right. Reassures her first. Then he launches into this really detailed, crucial explanation. He lays it all out.
His identity, his mission.
Everything. Says, I am Sun Wukong, disciple of Tang Sun Zhang, on a pilgrimage for scriptures. He explains how he cured the King of Zuzi's lovesickness.
Right, the devil.
And learn about her abduction from the king. He explicitly states his power subdue dragons and tigers, that classic phrase signifying his immense capabilities.
Leaving no doubt about who he is and what he can do.
Exactly. And his purpose is crystal clear. I'm here to rescue you.
And he even explains the whole disguise thing.
He does. He reveals that he was the defeated vanguard who actually killed the minor demons earlier.
Oh, okay.
And that he deliberately transformed into Yulai Yukua, specifically to infiltrate and get this message to her. It's a full confession, laying out the whole strategy, crucial for building trust. Fast.
Makes sense. But he needs proof, right? Words are one thing.
He knows. And for undeniable proof, Wukong offers her a precious rosary.
A simple item?
Relatively simple, yes. But it's a tangible link to her world, to the king, perhaps.
Yeah.
Something immediately recognizable.
And does it work?
Instantly. It breaks right through her disbelief and fear. The moment she sees it, she just bursts into tears.
Wow.
And immediately bows deeply to him, full gratitude, pledging she'll never forget his great kindness if he truly saves her. Wukong knows.
The Demon King's golden bells. These things are potent. One shake, 300 Zang of fire.
Whoa, hang on. A Zang is what, like 11 feet?
Roughly, yeah. So that's like nearly 2/3 of a mile of fire, just from one shake.
Okay, that's a lot of fire.
Second shake. Same distance, 300 Zhang, but this time it's smoke, thick smoke.
Right.
But the third shake, that's a really nasty one, 300 Zhang of yellow sand.
Sand. Why is sand the worst?
Because the text is super specific. If that sand gets churned up and you breathe it in, like into your nostrils.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It can kill you. Fatal.
Okay, so Wukong knows these things are serious business. I remember he already had a bad run-in, right? Didn't he sneeze just from being near their power?
He did. He sneezed twice, which tells you right away these aren't just shiny toys. They have an immediate physical effect.
And the Demon King knows how valuable or dangerous they are because he keeps them where?
On his waist, at all times. Never lets them out of his sight.
Right. So stealing them seems basically impossible.
Directly, yeah, absolutely impossible. You can't just fight him for them. He'd use them on you instantly.
So Wukong needs a plan, a really clever plan.
And that's where it gets really interesting. This isn't about fighting.
No brute force.
None at all. It's all manipulation, impersonation. It's pure psychological gamesmanship.
So what's the core strategy?
It's brilliant, really. He gets the Gold Saint Empress involved. She's the Demon King's captive.
Okay.
Wukong tells her, basically, okay, you need to pretend you actually like this guy.
Ooh, that's cold, but smart.
Right. Feign affection, get him comfortable, and then ask him to let her hold on to the bells for safekeeping.
Turning it from a fight into, like, a stealth mission based on trust or fake trust.
Exactly. A total shift in approach. It's incredibly cunning.
And Wukong doesn't just give instructions. He gets involved himself, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, immediately. He transforms. Changes his shape into one of the Demon King's own personal guards.
Which one?
A guy named Yulai Yukua.
Yulai Yukua. That means to come and go, right?
It does. Kind of perfect for an infiltrator, you know?
Totally. So as this guard, he just waltzes in.
Pretty much. Opens the palace doors, calls for the maids, like he owns the place. He's in.
Okay, so he's inside. Now what? He needs to sell this idea to the Demon King.
And he spins this elaborate lie as Yulai Yukua, he tells the Demon King, hey, the Empress invited me over because Sun Wukong told her that her old husband, the King of Zuzi, doesn't want her back. He's already got a new Empress.
Oh, wow. Playing right into the Demon King's insecurities and desires.
Exactly. It hits his ego, makes him think, aha, she's finally choosing me.
That says it works.
Like a charm. The Demon King is thrilled, absolutely delighted.
Really?
Yeah. He's so happy with Yulai Yukua for bringing this news that he promises him a promotion, says he'll make him a Taizai, a top official, once he conquers the Zuzi kingdom.
Huh. Already planning the victory parade based on this fake news. Wukong really knew how to push his buttons.
Totally understood his target. So then the Demon King goes to see the Empress.
And she has to play her part now.
And she does, remarkably well. Greets him super warmly, even tries to hold his hand.
How does he react to that?
He's actually a bit awkward. Says his hand hurt. Which makes her act even more effective, you know?
She lays it on thick.
Oh, yeah. She starts complaining, we haven't even shared a bed in 3 years.
Wow.
And you never share your cool treasures with me. My old husband, the king, he shared his treasures.
Ouch. Setting up the comparison.
Clever.
Very clever. It leads right into her big ask.
The bells.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She points to them. Why do you always carry those three bells? Don't you trust me? Hmm. Why not let me keep them safe for you? You know, heart-to-heart trust, like a real married couple.
Masterful manipulation. Using his desire for that connection against him.
Totally. It's all about making him feel secure, loved.
Yeah.
Lowering his guard.
And does he fall for it? The bells are so important to him.
He does. He actually laughs, apologizes for being, you know, untrusting, and agrees. Gives in completely.
Unbelievable. Her performance must have been amazing. Must have been Oscar worthy. Because he then takes them off.
From where again? Under his clothes.
Yeah, close to his body, under two or three layers of clothes. Shows you how much he normally protects them.
But he's still careful, even when handing them over.
Oh, absolutely. He doesn't just toss them to her. First, he plugs up the openings with cotton.
Okay, why? To stop them from shaking accidentally.
Presumably, yeah. To dampen them somehow. Then he wraps them in leopard skin. Extra layer of safety.
And then comes the warning.
The critical warning. He looks right at the Empress and says explicitly, do not shake them.
Don't shake them. Got it. That feels important.
Hugely important. Foreshadowing, right.
Totally. So the Empress takes them.
Takes them, puts them on her dressing table, reassures him, don't worry, they'll be safe here. Nobody will shake them.
Okay, bells are on the table. Wukong's probably watching from the shadows.
Well, he's still disguised as Yu La Yu Kwa right there in the room.
Ah, right. So what happens next? How does he get them?
Distraction. The Empress calls for a feast. Wine, food, wild boar, deer, rabbit, coconut wine. A big celebration.
To rejoice with the Demon King? Perfect cover.
The perfect cover. While the Demon King is distracted by the food and the Empress's attention.
Wukong makes his move.
Wukong, as Yu Lei Yu Kwa, just gently picks up the bells from the dressing table.
Really? Nice.
And then slowly makes his way out of the palace. Mission accomplished. Or so he thinks.
But there's always a but in these stories, isn't there?
This is where everything goes sideways.
You get outside.
He's outside the main palace area, maybe in a pavilion or courtyard. He's got the prize.
And then,
for some reason, maybe excitement, maybe carelessness, maybe he just forgot the warning he literally just overheard.
Oh, no.
He pulls the cotton plugs out of the bells.
Didn't the Demon King just say not to shake them? And didn't he plug them for a reason?
Exactly. It's a massive blunder, a huge oversight.
So what happens when he pulls the plugs?
Instant chaos. Uncontrolled power erupts. Fire, smoke, and that deadly yellow sand just explode outwards, filling the whole pavilion.
Oh, man. So much for a clean getaway.
Not even close. It's pandemonium.
Does anyone notice?
Oh, yeah. The gate guards hear the commotion, see the fire and smoke, and they panic. They actually crash into the back palace trying to raise the alarm.
Alerting the Demon King.
Who comes rushing out, yelling about putting out the fire. And then he sees it.
Sees what?
He sees you, Lai Yu Kwa, or rather, the source of the chaos standing there with his bells.
Busted.
Completely busted. The Demon King is furious. You stole my bells!
What does Wukong do? He's caught red-handed.
He panics, drops the bells, instantly changes back to his true Monkey King form.
No more disguise.
Nope. Pulls out his Re-Jingu Bang, his magic staff.
Ready to fight.
And starts fighting like mad against all the demon guards pouring out. Tiger generals, bear masters, leopard heads, even cunning rabbits, the text says.
Quite the scene. What about the Demon King?
He snatches his bells back up off the ground.
Priorities, right. Definitely.
And then he orders the main front gate sealed shut. Trap Wukong inside.
Smart move. Is Wukong trapped?
He struggles for a bit, yeah. Can't break through the sealed gate easily. But then, classic Wukong.
Transformation time.
He turns himself into a silly fly. Tiny, insignificant.
Yeah, it starts flies out.
Not quite. He clings to a stone wall, hiding, while the demon soldiers are running around looking for this big monkey warrior. They search everywhere but can't find him.
Clever. So he gets away.
He does. Slips away while they're confused.
Meanwhile, the Demon King. He must be putting two and two together now.
Exactly. Hmm. As his guards report they can't find the thief, the Demon King starts thinking. The disguise, the impossible theft, the transformation.
It clicks.
He figures it out. That guard, Yu La Yu Kwa, Sun Wukong must have killed him and taken his shape. He realizes the whole thing was a setup.
Admits the logic of it, even though he was fooled.
Right. And his thought is really telling. He's worried.
Worried of what? Wukong's gone.
He worries what would have happened if Wukong had gotten away with the bells, if they'd been taken out of the mountain. It underscores just how powerful he knows they are.
Yeah, the potential consequences.
So he orders everyone to stay vigilant, keep the gates sealed for now. The threat isn't entirely over in his mind.